Hello and welcome to On the Corner, the official podcast of PitchList.com. I'm your host, Eric Smolski, joined at First Pitch Arizona by the man himself, Nick Pollock.
What is happening? Yes, we are live, and I'm standing. Eric is not yet.
I don't know if I'm gonna.
Okay, well, you do you.
It's been a day.
I know, but I'm so excited. This is a very special podcast we do once a year, where Eric and I are in Arizona in front of a wonderful crowd. Look at them.
Yeah.
Oh, my. Yes, indeed. And this is the time where we are allowed to talk to everybody else and hear why we are wrong with our rankings. So what we have here is our top 20 rankings, and we're going to go through the top 100. And you're going to hear people come up to the mic and ask their questions and put us to the coals of the fire about how could we be so wrong. Eric, are you excited about this?
I'm very excited. I was recently just sitting in the grass in the outfield watching a AFL home run derby.
Don't forget the bucket of popcorn.
Had a bucket of popcorn. So I'm ready to go.
Yeah.
I'm in a very pleasant mood right
Absolutely.
Now.
Absolutely. Yes. Absolutely. So
are we going? We don't need to say our top 20.
No. And right? I will say that in the podcast notes listening to this right now, you will see links to the five images that the lovely Josh Sperry made for us. So you can see.
Woo!
Oh, yeah. That you'll see the rankings. Also, you can see them on PitchList, my top 200. Eric, I believe yours are on Roto-World, if that's
they
right.
Will be they one, will top be. 150 will be on Ooh. Roto-World.
Correct. Oh, beautiful.
Yes.
So you guys can check those out there. And what's really funny is that Eric changed his rankings in the last five days.
I did. I've been changing them this weekend as well.
And I haven't. Yeah. And I will tell you some small changes in this podcast. But before we take too long, Eric, do you think we should take our first question?
Yeah, I don't know who it's going to be from.
I have no idea. I think it's some guy named Andy Bell.
Yes.
What do we got here?
Andy Bell, long time, first time. Let's just have the Kyle Bradish conversation. You made both your top 20s. I think it's going to be a little bit jarring to folks. I happen to agree with y'all, so not so much a disagreement, but really an opportunity to kind of let people know why he needs to be back in the top 20 or at least 25, I think, Kyle Bradish, Baltimore Orioles.
Sure. I will let Nick start. That's a question from Paul Spohr. Thank you very much, Paul. Yeah,
woo!
But just before we let Nick start, as of right now, Nick has Kyle Bradish ranked 18th. I have Kyle Bradish ranked 14th. So when Paul said he's in both of our top 20s, those are the rankings. Nick, why don't you start first with your thoughts on why Kyle Bradish is in your top 20?
It's so funny. I had the entire spiel that he just said in my head to lead it to Eric, and then he cut me off. It was great. Kyle Bradish is a perfect example of something that we've seen with injured pitchers. I'm starting to realize that those that are coming back from a long time injury, those who have those half seasons are perfectly set up for an elongated, successful season thereafter. Tarek Skubal did this. We saw this just now with Matthew Boyd. We saw it with Joe Ryan. We even saw in the past Shane Bieber have a couple games before he had a 200-inning season the next year. We saw Jacob deGrom last year showcase that he had some life before, of course, his 170-plus inning run this year. And I feel like Kyle Bradish is the same way. When Kyle Bradish was set up for his season before Tommy John, I had him around 20. I was really excited about his potential volume, his phenomenal slider that's too plain, and the situation, of course, with the Orioles, you should get a lot of wins, good amount of volume. I am not the kind of guy that will say, oh, it's X amount of innings, so thus he can't go 150, 160. No, the Orioles are just going to say, Kyle Bradish, go every 5 days, and you will go 90 pitches constantly. I think this is such a lovely floor pitcher with Bradish, good strikeout rate and everything. I think it's great.
Yeah, I used DeGrom as an example for this. Obviously, DeGrom in 2024 came back through three starts, so we knew that he was healthy coming off the surgery. We got a sense of what his arsenal looked like. Did it seem like anything was majorly out of whack? It wasn't. So I felt like we went into the offseason expecting a fully healthy DeGrom. And so I feel that way about Kyle Bradish now, not that he is DeGrom, but that we saw six starts. We saw what the arsenal looked like. The velocity looked good. The slider still had swing and miss upside. I did a presentation earlier this week on top 25 starting pitchers. Some of the things I talked about were fastball command, breaking balls with swing and miss ability to both righties and lefties. Bradish has that. The four-seam fastball isn't great, but he's a two-fastball pitcher with a sinker and a four-seam fastball, so I think that will keep people from sitting on the four-seam fastball. The slider to righties and the curve to lefties both had a swinging strike rate over 22%. small sample size of just six games, but that gives us swinging strike upside to both righties and lefties. It gives us two fastballs, the sinker he commands in the zone better than the four-seamer, and as Nick pointed out, I think that Baltimore is going to be a decent situation for him. And so I had him as a top 25-ish guy before. And so I have him 14 right now. I will say, and we should say this for all of the rankings, Nick and I both collectively have tiers of injured pitchers, and they are just listed together as like injured pitchers, and both of us have them in like the 50, 60 range or whatever. So there are some guys who ended the year injured, like your Garrett Coles and Pablo Lopez's and, you know, Spencer other names like that, Schwellenbach, where like maybe those guys come into the season healthy and they bump Kyle Bradish down a couple spots. Who knows? But as of right now, those guys are not factored into this part of the rankings.
Yeah. Does that answer your question? Oh, thank you so much, Paul Spohr. Everybody applaud. Paul Spohr, thank you for that question. Incredible. All right, next person. Who we got? Who are you?
Hi, I'm Nate Schwartz, longtime staffer, first-time caller.
All right, Nate Schwartz, everybody. Oh, woo!
So when George Kirby came back from the shoulder injury,
yes,
his arm angle dropped pretty significantly, changed the fastball shape pretty significantly, and he's really turned into the Blake Snell blueprint of high fastballs, low sliders. But the fastball shape really isn't necessarily built for that anymore. Mm. Do you see with the high ranking for really both of you that the shape is going to make that sustainable through the full season, or do you think that's something that comes back with the off season?
Yeah. Really quickly, Eric has him at 11, which actually I didn't realize you did.
I also currently do not have him at 11.
Yeah.
So okay. I will say this has
already changed. He already updated these, and now it's different again.
But he is still in my top 20.
It's just November. You've done like five updates already.
No. Well, because again, I just did a whole presentation on top 25 starting pitchers, and so Kirby for me became more of a fringy option for that. I have him now down at 17. So he is in my top 20, but he is lower than 11. So I have him at 17 and Nick has him at 10.
Yes, that's right. So Eric, why did you drop him?
I dropped him because, well, first of all, the four-seam fastball command, as Nate alluded to, had been diminishing or you know, becoming less successful, and that was before just this past year with the arm injury. Since in 2024, also the four seam fastball command was not kind of where we would have wanted to see it. Also, for me, you know, when I did my top 25 starting pitcher article, I really wanted to see plus swing and miss offerings to both righties and lefties. Last year, George Kirby's slider had just a 14% swing strike rate to righties. That's fine. It's above average. But when you're looking for a pitcher in your top 20, top 25, you're not looking for somebody who's above average. You're looking for somebody who is elite. And so George Kirby has an above average secondary pitch to righties. He has an elite secondary pitch to lefties. He has given up a decent amount of hits in his career as well. Really, you know, six pitches in a pitch mix, multiple fastball variations. I like all of that. But I just look at it and said, and Paul asked the question during my presentation of like, is there a path forward for George Kirby to make the leap that like a Logan Gilbert did? And for me, it is with that secondary pitch to righties. If I could see that slider be more impactful and not be a slightly above average offering, but be a plus offering to righties because he's going to see more righties, I could rank him closer to the top 10. Without seeing it right now, I have him more around 20.
Yeah, so there's a part of me that wants to lower George Kirby a bit, because I feel I am wish casting a little. It's one of the biggest struggles that we have, right? Of this is someone that we really believe is going to be a different thing than we have seen. And thus I want to get ahead of that. While it conflicts my notion to say, don't wish cast, just be safe, especially early on. But man, I can't turn down the fact that George Kirby did the thing I've been waiting for him to do for so long, which is sinkers and four-seamers upstairs and sliders and curveballs down, and he nailed it. I mean, I can't express this enough. As Nate mentioned, Blake Snell blueprint, the last three games, he had 31 strikeouts, and it wasn't like it was against, I don't know, the Reds carpet or Rocky Road. The last one was the Dodgers, 10 strikeouts in that one. It was him being that guy, and being, yes, this is what I do now.
You mean
and that,
that
makes me so excited.
That really mediocre manager. Dodgers offense?
Oh, yeah, mediocre Dodgers offense. So bad, terrible, okay, right. They just won a World Series, Eric.
Not because their offense.
I don't know. If you had Miguel Rojas hitting home run, it sounds like a good offense, right? Okay, no. But George Kirby to me, yeah, I understand why I would push him down. I would say everyone else after, I could give a very good argument as to why they shouldn't be in the top 10. And I would say really the easiest for me is the top six, maybe seven, eight or so. And then it can be kind of like anyone's game a bit. For me personally, I feel like Max Fried is just such a good floor. Yoshinobu Yamamoto, even though he won't go 32, 34 starts and doesn't have that potential as, say, Brian Wu. Obviously, we know that's going to be a very good quality. And Cole Reagans, you guys just know that I love the guy and what he does, but really I love the fact that he was healthy to end the year and was dominant, and that makes me confident in the same way of as I was just talking about with Kyle Bradish. So with George Kirby, I could be convinced to put him at 15, 16 and not do that. But I want to lower like everyone in that top 15 or so. So I can go back and forth. I'm not worried about the shape, as you were mentioning, because I think the command of it is honestly more important. And it wasn't an elite shape four-seamer before. It wasn't one that we said, oh, that is a good under-the-hood four-seamer. So I'm not going to say like, oh, no, he needs to get it back to it now.
I think my one kind of follow-up question, I know, Eric, you alluded to it, but he had this wide mix, but as we saw him come back from injury, it really kind of shrunk. Mm-hmm. He wasn't really throwing the changeup very much. He really wasn't throwing the splitter, which I think a lot of us were excited about. And we saw it.
Some of us were excited.
Some of us were excited about. But do you worry at all that, kind of as we saw in his playoff starts, that he gets too predictable in the fastball slider and he gets hurt kind of as he gets deeper into game, second, third time through the order?
I personally am. I give a little bit more with George Kirby of a like a wide net in terms of or like a buffer coming back from injury, where I do think that pitchers, first of all, don't always come back from injury 100%. And so there are certain pitches that still bother them or aren't as effective or whatever it is. And I think a lot of pitchers in that sense go into a little bit of survival mode. It's like, how do I get through the season doing what is best, what feels best for me? And so when I see a pitch mix shrink coming off an arm injury, if I also assume that pitcher maybe wasn't still 100% in that back part of the season, I'm not ready to say like, okay, he's going to scrap this pitch or scrap that pitch or whatever. Now, if he comes out in spring and is still not throwing the splitter and is still, then I might say, all right, it wasn't just recovery from the injury. But in the middle of a season like that, I'm going to operate under what we've seen in the years prior, not what we just saw immediately post-injury in terms of the pitch mix and approach and stuff.
That's a fantastic insight about kind of limited repertoire initially and everything. And I think what we've seen from George Kirby is that he is someone who is a tinkerer and will figure things out and add when he needs to. I am not even worried with the current mix. If he just went with that, awesome. I'm not necessarily against the splitter, just use it rarely, and that's fine. Just like he does with his knuckleball, right? So hopefully we do see, if we see the same thing that we saw at the end of the season from George Kirby, I am really, really high on him, which is why I have him here, but I could be convinced to be putting him at 15 or so too. Thank you, Nate. Nate Schwartz. Oh, great question. All right. We have, Larry up here. Larry.
Yeah. Larry Seeley. Hi. Are these ranks meant to be ranks that you would draft at, or are they based on skill? Because if you would actually draft to these, you seem to be embracing a lot of risk.
Mm.
The bottom eight on Eric's all have a lot of scars.
Sure.
So, very good question. Personally, I approach these ranks as ranks that I would draft at. However, I would probably skip that those pitchers you mentioned that have scars. So that's just how I would draft strategically. Like, I get to a point where, yeah, I don't really want to put Chris Sale inside the top 20 or Blake Snell inside the top 20 because I don't trust the volume. But if I look at the pitchers behind them, realistically, if I'm at a point in my draft and somebody says, you have to draft a starting pitcher here, it's Chris Sale or it's Freddie Peralta, I'm probably not taking Freddie Peralta. But what I probably am going to do is punt on the starting pitcher at that point altogether and take a hitter and then jump back into starting pitching when I feel like, okay, if Chris Sale and Blake Snell are here, now when it's like, you know, 20 somewhat starting pitchers have gone off the board, then I feel a little better about the risk, or somebody else has taken them and that's fine. And so like Nick and I were looking at the pitcherless mock draft that we did a couple weeks ago and starting to look at where pitchers were going. And I feel like, you know, if I get somebody that's inside of my top 10, 11, or, you know, 13, because even like somebody like DeGrom, he has his scars, but, you know, I still trust the, yes,
Kyle Bradish. He refuses.
Yes. But if I draft one of those guys in my top 10, whoever falls the lowest, I'm probably going to sit on my hands with starting pitching for a while, let somebody take the Sales and the Snells and the Glasnows, and then I'll get back into starting pitching after that.
It's a really, really hard thing. And we've been talking about it a lot of like, maybe we should just be putting Tyler Glasnow outside of it, right? Maybe we should be.
I moved him down to 23rd.
Unbelievable. Eric, it's okay. And like I constantly say, I don't want to draft Dylan Cease or Blake Snell because I don't want to deal with the anxiety of it. I don't want to deal with just what are they going to be? And just as a fantasy manager, it just drives me up the wall. There is a conversation to be had as these, yes, to answer your question, are if I'm drafting today, that is what I do in season with the list. It is if I'm drafting today in a 12-teamer, this is how I would draft. And it sometimes gets interpreted as rest of season ranks as if it's a best ball, right? And that is completely not it because I draft in a way knowing I'm going to be replacing guys off the wire. So then I want to put myself in a situation where I'm drafting someone later on in my draft who is I can make an early decision on, oh, I need to move on to somebody else instead of trying to aim for the 60th on the player rater or something, which generally is just volume the full year, but they actually aren't good for you in whip and ERA, and you're better off just burning and churning on the wire to get better value. So here, the question really is, if I have Tyler Glasnow at 15, I'm saying I want them more than Hunter Brown and Joe Ryan. It's because I think if Tyler, this is all assuming Tyler Glasnow's pitching to start the season, right? If he is, when he gets hurt, I'm saying that Tyler Glasnow plus whoever I get as replacement level is going to be worth more than Hunter Brown or Joe Ryan. That is what I'm saying if I'm putting him there. And I don't know if I agree with my ranking right now. It might change. I might just be happier that I have Joe Ryan or so. But then Joe Ryan has risk, right? We can see in the second half a lot. Oh, man, is that home run rate going to stay at 2? I don't think it will. I think it's going to come down, but maybe it doesn't. Hunter Brown, to me, is risk because, as you guys know, I wonder how much Brown can do for you, right? That's what I constantly say. And, yes, he doesn't have a secondary with a big whiff pitch. Yes, his four-seamer velocity was 97, 98 all of a sudden last year, and that really propelled him. And then it went down as the season went on, and he wasn't this explosive pitcher nearly as often as you would think looking at the season marks. So everyone here has some form of risk. And I do want to throw in, how many guys got injured last year that you thought was a safe one? Logan Gilbert was safe, right? George Kirby was safe for injuries. Max Fried was safe with injuries, right? It's we can go in and say, well, these guys are going to give us 180, these are going to give us 120, but that's not the reality, not set in stone either. So that also pushes me toward drafting Glasnow, DeGrom, a Chris Sale type a little bit more than I feel like inherently I would want to. Hope that answers your question, Larry. All right.
On the board right now are our rankings for 21 to 40.
I already did it.
Oh, you did it. Oh, my God.
Yes.
What are you?
Because I can push a button on the computer. I don't need your fancy wireless mouse. I can use
Eric,
the laptop.
This is a trust issue, and I shouldn't have it. Okay? That's on me.
So we have our rankings 21 to 40. Do we have questions about the rankings for 21 to 40? Nate does.
Nate Schwartz, please. Part two.
Longtime staffer, second time caller. So I know Eric had Yuri Perez in his top 20 at 20, and I believe Nick has him at 25. And my big question is, one of the stats that we did at Pitcherless this year was a non-competitive rate.
Oh, yeah.
And comparing non-competitive rate with mistake rate. And Eury Pérez has really good NC rate plus mistake rate on the fastball. Like one of the best figures in baseball. But the breaking stuff is really, really poor.
Absolutely, yeah.
Do you think that that is something that comes back as he moves on from the Tommy John surgery? Sure. As, you know, that's something that really takes a step forward that pushes him up into a top 25 pitcher? Or is that something that you're really worried about as a kind of general question about his profile going right forward?
So, by the way, I just got to say, NC rate plus mistake rate is such a fun thing because it's we don't really talk about that one too much. We don't have it on our player pages at the moment. But if you don't know, essentially saying NC rate is an automatic ball, and then mistake rate is double the chance of allowing a hit, right? So it's essentially the worst strike pitch and the worst ball pitch combined. So the two extremes of bad pitches, right? And the lower you have of that total, the better. Eury Pérez, his biggest strength is a four-seamer that is absolutely elite. And if you want to look at one quality from Eric Samulski's what makes a top 25 starting pitcher, presentation here at First Pitch Arizona, you'll see that an elite fastball is the most common. So having that foundation as a constant strike pitch, we've seen Ryan Nelson have no secondary stuff and be a productive starter. So that's how I see it with the Eury, and I love the fact that the Marlins have a better defense than they did the initial part of the season with the Eury. I love the fact that he had what I was just talking about with half of a season and a good ramp up from Tommy John so that he's really ready to go a full amount in 2026. I love also that the Marlins let guys go. We saw with Sandy Alcantara. Oh my gosh, why are you going 7 innings in September? I don't get it. Doesn't matter. He did. Eury is going to be in that same position too. And yes, the secondaries, I think they are going to come back. I love the fact that he threw his changeup as much as possible to lefties, even though it was so rarely good. Yep. He was constantly working on it, trying to get it better. I would be absolutely shocked if we saw the same exact struggles across a full year with Eury Pérez. So To me, among all of these arms, which we're starting to get into, oh no, there's a good reason why this one doesn't work or that one doesn't work. There you have Eury with a foundational fastball that will work. And that makes me confident. I understand why Eric has him at 20.
Yeah, we should just note, again, because I looked this up for the presentation out here, his sweeper had a 22.2% swinging strike rate to righties. The harder slider had a 21% swinging strike rate to lefties. So even though we would like the secondaries to have been more consistent, they missed tons of bats to both righties and lefties.
Yeah.
So if you assume those secondaries get a little bit better another year off of Tommy John, because control and command tends to get better, you have the foundation here for somebody who I think has really strong swing and miss stuff with a solid foundational fastball and on a team that's going to just let him go and in a pitcher's park. And so to me, that's enough there that puts him inside the top 20.
Sam, I'm glad you guys got a little Pepio in your Stepio.
Oh yeah. My gosh. You're making this a slogan of First Pitch Arizona. I'm here for it. Cause we have Pepio at 26 and 32. That's me and Eric respectively. And we have, oh man, David is here for a question. Oh, let's give him a round of applause.
No, don't.
David McNichol, hi.
Hi. So I like old pitchers.
Mm.
They don't get talked about here, and you talked about the shiny squirrel.
Yes.
Right? And so there's Logan Webb, but Robbie Ray. I would like to have a discussion about Robbie Ray because everyone's forgotten about him, right?
Oh, I haven't forgotten about him. How could you with his grunting?
And his pants.
Yeah, I wasn't going to go there. I knew everyone else would. No. I mean, 32 for me, Robbie Ray. 36 for Eric. Really quickly for me with Robbie Ray, it's a case of I don't know what I'm going to get every day, and I hate that. I hate the fact that I saw him go like 70% four-seamers some days, and then he would go 45% others, and it's not even like a platoon split that he's doing. He's just like, well, I'm not going to throw my slider today or my curveball or my changeup. And I just don't love that. I also feel that it's very much linked to his fastball velocity. And he did actually gain a little bit last year. I do have my worries that it fluctuated as the season went on.
And he gained but was still below average for starters.
Right, right.
93.6.
Lefty bump included.
Sure.
Yeah included, though. So it just feels to me like I have it as Ray, Webb, and Valdez, and I really group them together as these volume arms who should get wins. I hope their whip doesn't hurt me, because that is absolutely a potential problem for Ray, Webb, and Valdez throughout the year. And I don't know how to frame that, because I think with Chase Burns and, oh gosh, Dylan Cease, and Michael King, Rasmussen, and Schlittler, I will get a better understanding if this is working out, maybe not Dylan Cease, than Ray, Webb, and Valdez. So there's a bigger chance that I'm stuck with a lame duck or whatever is a goose egg in August with those guys than I am the other, which is what is making me more inclined to go for the other ones over the old guys.
And for me, it's in addition to the below average velocity for Robbie Ray, his fastball command is below average, and he only has one fastball variation, which is the trend in baseball right now is multiple fastball variations, and from pitchers for various reasons. But so I have a guy whose fastball velocity is below average, command is below average, doesn't have a secondary fastball to kind of keep people off of that singular fastball. And so I think that gives him a larger risk factor, because there isn't that ability to say, okay, if this isn't working today, I can jam hitters inside with the sinker a little bit more, or, hey, if I'm not getting ahead with the fastball, I can get ahead with something else. He has a pretty narrow pitch mix, and as Nick pointed out, doesn't have a consistent pitch mix in terms of, like, this is the pitch he's going to every single time. The swinging strike rate, the swing and miss stuff is still there, and so, you know, that's why I have him 36. Like, I'm still happy to take him on my team. It has risk without the upside of, like, those Snell, Glasnow, Sale risk guys we talked about before.
And also, it's really funny. Robbie Ray did have a sinker when it was on the Mariners.
Yeah.
And the Giants are like, why would you throw that? And everyone else is like, but that's gone now, apparently. I don't know. He's just so weird. And I don't like weird. I like knowing what they are and how this is going to work, at least an understanding of that, right? So if it's weird, I'm not for it. But thank you, David McNichol. Great question. Because we haven't talked about Ray enough.
Yeah.
Please.
Yes.
Jacob, join us.
Jacob from Houston. Quick question. One of the things that we saw in the playoffs is young pitching excelling. And Trey Savage is like the poster boy for that. But we see Nolan McLean up there for you, Eric, at 37, and you, Nick, 38. But right above that is Bubba Chandler. I'm seeing their ADP for NFBC. A little flip-flop. So can you talk a little bit about those two?
Let me go really quickly.
I'm so glad you brought that up.
So this guy, I'm pointing right now at Eric, was like, hey, Josh Sperry, can you update my graphic like 5 times? I didn't. Once. I put up mine before we had a lot of the playoff showcase. And I was thinking to myself, okay, I didn't really see too much of Savage in the regular season. So that has a bit to do with my ranking, which we'll see in the next image. It's around the 50s, I believe. And after the playoffs, yes, we have more data on him. I think I said on a podcast somewhere, or maybe not, I was talking to someone, I would actually have Savage at 39 right now, right? Right between Nolan McLean and Cade Horton. Now, why Bubba Chandler? I'm going to let Eric Samulski talk about that one.
Thanks. I think we've been talking a lot about like that tier of like second year pitchers. Some of them will be rookies in terms of eligibility next year. And for some reason, we're not drafting Bubba Chandler in that range. And I think that that's foolish.
Why?
I think, first of all, the way that Bubba Chandler's situation unfolded this year has people very critical of him. I think there's continues to be the narrative out there that he has really poor command because the Pirates kept him in the minors because he couldn't throw strikes. He came up in the majors and showed that that wasn't the case. And I think as we've talked about in many presentations before, these players are human beings. And Bubba Chandler was somebody who vocally was upset with the fact that he was not called up. And he basically said, what else do I have to do to get to the big leagues? And then after he vocalized in an interview that he was upset, all of a sudden he started having 4 walk games, 5 walk games, but he wasn't having those in May and early in June. And so to me, it's not a stretch to say, here's a guy who's very upset with the way he's being treated. He's either pitching frustrated or he's pitching trying to aggressively prove something so that he can get promoted. The results get out of whack a little bit. He finally gets promoted. All of a sudden, those command issues they vanish when he's up in the big leagues. And so I think that that's a little bit of much ado about nothing. Now, Nick's not criticism, but hesitation with Bubba Chandler is that he's a righty who really relies on the changeup. And so that can be problematic in terms of saying, oh, you know, where's the value here in terms of like the secondaries? When I look at it, I think the slider got good grades when he was coming up as a prospect. The slider had below average swing and miss overall, but the slider had a 24% put away rate when he was up in the big leagues. The average for starting pitchers was 18%. He only threw the slider 25% of the time in 2 strike counts. That's well below average.
It's like 35% or so.
It's 31st percentile for starting pitchers. So I see a pretty clear path forward. It's not the slider doesn't miss bats, because when he throws it in 2 strike counts, it misses tons of bats. It's whether it's the sequencing or how he's using it. So I still see the slider being a pitch that can miss bats. We know he has the changeup. We know he has the fastball. So I'm super happy with Bubba Chandler, and I would be taking him over Nolan McClain and Chase Burns.
Yeah, I mean, it's four-seamer command is really the thing with Bubba, so I love that. It's also just we haven't seen enough, too. We just have not. You know, we've seen Chase Burns have 3 straight double-digit games, and he did that against the Dodgers, too. Don't say anything about the Dodgers again, please. Thank you. We saw Cam Schiller have a fantastic time. We saw Nolan McClain have his run, too, and everything, right? But Bubba Chandler was just like this little squint of what we're going to get. And with the slider, it's not like your 90-mile-per-hour one. I think it's 87, which is good, but it's not the
89.
It is 89. Mm-hmm. Okay, well, that's a little more encouraging. I hope it's not because he was in relief at the time and like as it started, it held over. Yeah, but I think he's great. I'm trying not to chase the shiny squirrel, as David mentioned, and I feel like Bubba is that a lot, and I don't know what to do. That's the real answer there. Thank you so much, Jacob from Houston, for that question. Kyle Bland is here. Oh my gosh, director of analytics and the grandfather of Process Plus.
Kyle Bland, longtime data guy, first time talker. So Eric, you have Logan Webb 28. Nick, you have him at 33.
Yeah.
This is a pitcher who just finished SP21.
Oh, don't do this to me.
With a third percentile BABIP.
Wait, hold on.
How is he going to be even worse than a third percentile BABIP return?
I got this. Oh man, this is easy.
Go for it.
So first of all, and this is so easy. He had the most strikeouts, right? Yeah, I believe it was the most strikeouts in the NL.
With a mid 20 strikeout.
And what was his final SP rater? What was it, 21?
Yeah.
With that? Oh, man. So I understand that BABIP was bad. You're going to have a higher BABIP when you have as many ground balls as Logan Webb has. Third percentile, I understand.
346.
You're not going to be like a 70th percentile.
30
no, but hold on. Let me finish my point, Kyle Bland.
Logan Webb does.
Let me get to it.
He also does have a career 8.6 hit per nine, which is below average. So he has always given up more hits.
Here is the thing. And here's the biggest thing. So his strikeout rate in the first half, I'm looking like Bernie Sanders the way I use my hands right now, was far higher. It was the 1% of the 1%.
99% of the
bat. But he has a really good point, Bernie Sanders, about the 1% of the 1%. But Logan Webb was throwing so many strikeouts, was getting so many strikeouts that was just not sustainable because he's only had all 4 pitches working for like 2 months, and that's when that was at its peak. We saw in the second half the strikeout rate come down. And what happens when your strikeout rate goes down? More balls are in play. So even if the BABIP does come down, you're going to see more balls in play. And that hit per nine that Eric is just mentioning does not plummet as much as you think with the BABIP regressing. And the biggest issue I can't express enough is that even last year, with more strikeouts, yes, the BABIP was so bad, but yeah, it was a harmful whip for your team. And it was a harmful whip with so many innings, which is an even greater anchor holding you back in that category that is really hard to dig out of. So that's really the thing. I don't think that the strikeouts will be as high as they were, and he still has the same whip risk, which is why he's down here.
So the second half strikeout drop,
yes,
allows more balls in play.
Yes.
That happened. Uh-huh. And he's still SP21.
Okay, but remember that's what it is.
But SP21, yeah. when you do the fantasy rankings too,
and wins
play a big role in it. He tied his career high for wins last year. That adds to where he finishes in the player rater. So if you give him 13 wins instead of 15 wins, all of a sudden he's SP27 instead of SP21, yeah. And then our ranking of like SP29 and 30 is not.
But does pitching deeper into games give him a higher win chance? Even on a Giants team that isn't.
I guess my argument would be that's always been who he is, and 15 is his career high, which is what he did last year. So if that's always been who he is, he pitches deep into games, and so he has a better chance of wins. But historically, that has led to 11 wins, 12 wins, 13 wins. Then projecting him or thinking he gets 13 wins is more likely than 15.
He's been a top 10 pitcher with those lower win totals before.
So I'm going to ask you this question. Last year, with the strikeouts, with what they were for the whole year, mm-hmm. and his BABIP, right? Do you see that as a high performance of like the range of Logan Webb, or a low performance, or an average performance?
You're talking three different stats.
No, I'm just saying, like, where in the range of, like, Webb outcomes do you think that was last year?
I think the strikeouts are on the high range. Yeah. I think the BABIP is on the floor.
Right,
I think
so where BABIP, is it overall percentiles?
I think he regresses to a better place.
Not the question. Last year, what is his 0 to 100, 100 being the best version of Logan Webb we could get, 0 being the worst, what was it in 2024?
If I think he's regressing to a better version, then he's going to be
not going. What was he in 2024?
40 or 30th.
Because you think he was underneath his...
I think he underperformed because that's how he regresses to a better version
of
himself.
That's what I'm getting at. Yes. I don't think that was underperforming. I think that was overperforming. I think the strikeouts were overperforming. And even though the BABIP was worse, I see the package and everything. That was a better version than what we'll get this year. That's what I'm getting at. You see he's going to be a better version, and that's where the disagreement is. Yeah. But I think that because the strikeout rate comes down, then you're going to have this kind of similar hip or nine without the strikeouts.
Okay.
That's how I see it.
Sounds good. Yeah. Thanks, y'all.
Of course. Oh, thank you so much, Kyle Bland. Oh, absolutely. All right, we're going to go to the next one here. 41 to 60. And here, oh my gosh, look at this guy, Strange Savage. This is after your update?
No.
Oh my. Where is he, Eric? Where is any of these?
What do you mean, where are any of these?
Well, I don't know. You have another update that's not even here.
No, we've had many great discussions and panels here, and so I have been tweaking my starting pitcher rankings.
Yeah, all right, fair.
You think I don't talk starting pitching with Eno for 15 minutes and then go back to my computer maybe I'll go that way. Yeah, we were like, we're going to move this guy here and that guy there. And so it happened. But yes, the Treya Savage ranking. So Nick currently has him at 57. I have him at 50.
Well,
according to the graphs. I will say I still have him at 50.
You still, so this is correct.
This is correct for me. I
go to the tape.
He is a very, very, very confusing pitcher for me, because what he does in terms of like how he attacks hitters, it's hard to connect it to somebody else. Initially, when he was coming up, I was like, oh, it's like a Gausman thing where he really leans heavily on the splitter, and if the splitter isn't there, then he's not going to succeed. But it's not the Gausman thing, because he has more secondary pitches that are better. So theoretically, he has a better path to success than Gausman would based on his attack plan. And so I will say at this point in the beginning of November, I need to have a better understanding of Treya Savage before I feel like I have locked in my ranking of him. He's somebody I'm going to spend a lot of time looking at over the offseason to get a better sense of his approach and how successful I think it can be next year.
Absolutely. And I want to say, everybody online right now, thank you so much for your patience. We'll get to your stuff in a second as we talk about Treya Savage, but thank you so much for lining up and being ready to take the next question. So with Treya Savage, I do want to say that there's obvious Gausman comps, because he's a part of the Blue Jays, a fastball splitter, and he has that slider. A couple major things. One, yes, the slider makes a big differentiator. It's a much better slider than what Gausman has. However, fastball and splitter to me are worse than Gausman's. I think Treyas Savage's is more inconsistent, even though Gausman's has been more turbulent over the last year or so. It's just something we've constantly see return to. And yeah, Savage, still small sample size. It's hard for me to believe that all of a sudden we know this guy is this consistent splitter guy. Also, I don't know what to do with his four-seamer. It is an extreme arm angle. There's a lot of discussion about the deception and how, because it's such an extreme arm angle, it makes it really hard to pick up the splitter more, et cetera, et cetera. At the same time, it is an extreme arm angle that creates a favorable plane for hitting it at the top of the zone. It does not come with any of the fun things that you really want for an under-the-hood four-seamer. It does not have the swing strike rate that you really want it to be, or at least one that I think is going to be an elite one. I think he's going to get burned by that four-seamer, especially on the days that he doesn't have that splitter. The slider is going to make him more consistent than your traditional fastball splitter guy, because that is a proper weapon against right-handers. It's just, I don't know. I love the fact that the Jays obviously trust him, and that's good. You don't normally see that from young pitchers, that yes, you're going to go every 5 days. Everyone is probably going to talk about how many innings he goes. I'll tell you right now, they're just going to have you Savage in the rotation, and they're just going to let him keep going until something happens. So don't think about that in the slightest, in my view, for the year ahead. I kind of just don't really want to draft him. I just don't want to deal with it because it's more of an unknown. That's just how I feel about it. But you do what you want. It's always fun to chase those guys, too. And when they work out, it just, you want to root for the guy. You want to draft guys that you want to watch. And he's certainly one of them. Chris Webber is here. Oh, my gosh, the beautiful pitcher list shirt, too. Oh, yeah, Chris Webber, director of product at Pitcher List.
Hey, guys. First time.
Yeah, oh. Michigan forward.
Oh, yeah, we'll call a timeout for you. What's up?
I've never heard that before. All right, so I have a kind of a question about luck.
Oh, no.
Okay. So we've got two pitchers that are in this range, Gavin Williams and Trevor Rogers. In an earlier panel, we were talking about Trevor Rogers, obscenely low BABIP. Also, his hit luck showed something.
Oh,
like,
my gosh. Minus 23 right. On his four-seamer to right-handers.
Yeah, right.
Across 100 innings. It's insane.
But Gavin Williams, also incredibly low BABIP.
Mm.
But his hit luck showed most
right,
of
not
it was
nearly as
earned.
Ridiculous, right, yeah.
So how do you view those two? And how do you think one was more earned than the other?
So I will say this.
I'll hang up and listen.
Thank you so much, Chris. Man, we've talked so much about Gavin Williams.
A lot.
It's hard to really jump massively into it. I personally am not really thinking so much about the luck. I think everyone kind of recognizes that the second half of Gavin Williams was a little iffy. Like, we don't really trust that he's that kind of guy for the long term. Yeah.
And the we in this.
Yeah, okay. It was also like, I mean, the whole season of it, in the first half, we felt he should be better.
Yes.
And then the second half, he wasn't getting the strikeouts, but the ratios were there. And it was also, he went full circle with his pitch mix. You know, if you saw me on The Craft with Eno, just have a rant about like how he started the season, four-seamer, sweeper, curve. And then he tried cutter, then he tried sinker, then he tried this, tried that. And eventually he was four-seamer, sweeper, curve again by the end. It was, oh gosh, I don't know what to do with it. And at the end of the day, what I'm thinking about with Gavin Williams is, I don't know what you're going to do. And I don't like that. And I try to avoid it for the most part, as much as I want to believe that he'll have 7 feet of extension with a high velocity four seamer and then having two pitches that he'll trust with maybe a cutter and a sinker in there too. Like, I can see how it does work, but because it's not quite there now, I don't want to pay for it working.
Right. And we should say in the rankings, Nick and I both have Gavin Williams at 47. At 47.
What?
So even though Nick looks at that as like, oh, I'm not in on it. Like,
it's me not knowing what to do.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, depending on where the draft goes, I might move him up higher. But I just think like the first half was what it was. We can't ignore it. The second half showed progress. But Gavin Williams, as I mentioned in the other panel, very clearly is a thrower more than he is a pitcher at this point in his career. He is still learning how to attack And that's why they tinkered with his pitch mix all year. That's why they were adding multiple fastball variations. They drastically changed who he was to kind of cover up from the fact that he is still somebody who doesn't necessarily say, I'm dotting the corner on this pitch. He's saying, I'm going to throw these three fastball types, and if I throw them in the strike zone, that is going to lead to that's going to help kind of like reduce contact rather than saying I'm dotting the cutter away or the fastball up. So I think that there is still some risk there with Gavin Williams. What I will say with Trevor Rogers, I guess I have him higher than you because I don't see him on your... Oh, he's on the last one for you. You have him higher than Trevor Rogers.
Oh, yeah, I do. Yeah, so you. I mean, it's like this is a tier for me from... I want to say it's like where Lodolo is all the way to Gausman.
So this is a little bit of like the, you know, Nick has coined the term the swatch, right?
Yes, southpaw with a tight changeup.
With a tight changeup. But those are guys who, historically speaking, tend to overperform, right? Like Matthew Boyd, Noah Cameron this year, Andrew Abbott, Trevor Rogers. We talked about a lot of these guys, Parker Messick, guys who came up and did relatively well, Ian Seymour. Like it is a mold we have seen, and those guys tend to be like, how is he doing that? And how he's doing it is because he has good fastball command, even though it's not an elite fastball. He has a really good changeup. And then Trevor Rogers split the slider into a slider and a sweeper this year, so he has a five-pitch mix. And the sliders, both versions of them, actually missed lots of bats to both righties and lefties. The sweeper to just lefties, the slider to righties and lefties. And so I think that that provides a safer floor for him. And so that's why I personally have Trevor Rogers in this tier of like Cade Horton, Ranger Suarez, Trevor Rogers.
And that's
where
me too.
You're not drafting those guys thinking they're going to become aces. You're drafting those guys hoping that you're just getting really stable production week in and week out. And so I think that's maybe who Trevor Rogers is becoming, not the version on the Marlins where we were like, man, this guy could be dominant, but it's just, hey, this guy could be pretty solid for a full season.
It's really hard trying to figure out which swatch is going to work. It's just, there's a thought in my head of the league will figure it out. Like, it was so clearly a thing that worked last year. You know that a lot of these teams now are going to say, all right, guys, we got to figure out how to recognize changeups down and away from lefties as a right-handed offense. Like, it was just so prominent.
It's a lot harder. It's a lot harder to do.
It's just there's got to be some, you know, it's always a pendulum swing, right?
Yeah.
So we see the trend of high four-seamer guys, and they dominate 1 year. Then all of a sudden we see all the sweepers show up, and they dominate. And then you see all of a sudden the lefty changeup's working, and you get a sense that, okay, that's probably not going to be the thing next year. But maybe it will. So kind of take your pick with those. I will say, at least with Trevor Rogers versus Gavin, you kind of know what Trevor Rogers is going to try and do. And with Gavin, I don't know. So it's a tough call. But thank you for that question, Chris Weber. Oh, it was brilliant. Oh, my gosh, it's Jacob from Houston. He's back, baby. And what do we got?
One of the big things that we've talked about this weekend is risk. And in particular, injury risk. That's the thing that we need to plan around and keep in the forefront. And some people have said, if they're coming in injured, don't want to touch them.
Yeah.
Eric, 52 through 60.
Oh, no, hold on. Okay.
It's intentional, but do I just ignore that whole thing and just go hitter?
Let me explain. Let me explain really quickly. Eric.
It's tier.
We do the same thing that with our October rankings where we just kind of put the injured guys in this area where it's the cliff between, hey, I'll have this guy, I like him, and then there's the ones that we don't really know who we're going to like, where we know we're not going to have these pitchers in the same place when we have information on them.
Right.
So we just kind of clump them all saying, look, we think these are the ones that are going to show up and be healthy, but we don't know yet. So that's why Pablo Lopez is the first one for me. I feel like he's going to be healthy. Brandon Woodruff and his season hurt. Shane McClanahan. Yep. For Eric, it's Rodon, who, by the way, he's moved him since, I believe.
Yes.
And then, because we didn't know if it was going to be 2 months or not. Now it is, so you'd see them in the later one for Eric. But Eovaldi, Bubich is there, right? That's how we're both treating that. So that's the weird part of these lists.
It's basically a tier of guys where it's like, I really like these pitchers, and we'll see what happens with their injuries, and either they're going to move way up if they're healthy, or they're going to move way down if they're not going to start the year healthy.
I mean,
it's kind of a placeholder ranking.
Absolutely. I mean, honestly, the one like Tatsuya Imai might be the one that we move the most, because if he actually is posted and signed, like, he's probably a top 25 guy. I'm not even kidding.
That's also a placeholder ranking, because does he sign? Where does he sign?
Exactly. We don't know. So he's right there.
That in mind, then, of those pitchers that coming in with some injuries, which ones are you more ready to accept the risk for?
Pablo Lopez.
I love it. That's what I want to hear.
Yeah, Pablo Lopez, and for me, Spencer Schwellenbach as well.
Sure.
I would have liked to have seen Schwellenbach pitch at the end of the year, but I'm ready to accept the risk of Schwellenbach. The other guys, it's hard. They didn't make it back. And then, you know, Garrett Cole didn't pitch at all coming off Tommy John. And then he had the nerve issue before that. McClanahan, we saw all of that. I love Jared Jones. I would love to just buy back in. But who knows what's going to happen.
And very quickly on that, Schwellenbach, I do have a little worry that he got hurt because he had such a high velocity jump. And we won't see it return when he comes back, which is going to change him, but he's still going to be good if it has.
You had him
drop.
Ranked inside the top 25 before the velocity bump.
That's true. Well, that's very true. Yeah. It's just something to think about the perspective or the perception of what he is. And Shane McClanahan, if he's healthy, it's just health with Shane. So if he's healthy, if that's the thing we're saying, I would go for him definitely out there, but that's still obviously a question. Well, yes. Go ahead, Jacob.
I see two Kansas City Royals up here. Noah Cameron, Chris Bubich. Noah Cameron's a lefty.
Yeah.
You like him. Relatively healthy. There was a little dip in the second half, but can you compare just those two? And which Royal would you rather have?
Well, I mean, again, let's just say Chris Bubich is like, my shoulder's fine. Everything is great. I'm starting the regular season. I would rather have Chris Bubich. Noah Cameron, what I really appreciate about him is that he does have a wide arsenal. He does have very good command. I'm really impressed by cutters inside to righties. You have four seamers upstairs. You have changeups and curveballs down to righties. Attack plan with that. And then it's kind of funny with like a lefty, all you talk about is their plan to righties, because it's like, oh yeah, they have a slider. That'll work. No problem. Everything is fine. Unless you're like Jeffrey Springs, which is kind of hilarious. But Noah Cameron, fatigue at the end of the season is kind of typical that you see. And it's not something that normally sticks around the next year. But Chris Bubich did the Noah Cameron thing, but with a better fastball, essentially. So that's the one I think I'd go for.
Jake Crumpler, home run champ of Wiffle Ball.
Oh, yes. Yes. First pitch podcast host of In the Pen.
Yeah. He's amazing.
Maybe one of the coolest people here.
Savannah Banana.
Oh, yeah.
Thank you. That's a round of applause. A round of applause for me.
He's so attractive.
That was the first time I heard that one.
What's up?
I'm noticing a clear absence of Livy Dunn inside your top 60. Wondering where
Jake.
She ends up.
Jake!
Okay. No, I do see a noticeable absence of Emmett Sheehan inside of Eric's top 60.
Okay, good, because I sure didn't.
Right, and I'm on your side, which I think that's a ringing endorsement. I mean, everybody knows me, one of the biggest Dodgers haters out there. So for me to have an endorsement of Emmett Sheehan, I think says quite a bit. He's got an incredible fastball, slider, a lot of swinging strikes. It had success last year, and he gets a lot of strikes with it. I like the combination there. Eric, why?
Yeah, why, Eric?
Why? Eric, what's going on inside of your head?
It's honestly just... Nick has him right before his injured tier,
gotcha.
And I have him right after the injured tier.
Right? What risk are you seeing in Sheehan? Because he's got such a good team around him, it feels like he's got a guaranteed spot in that rotation.
Oh,
with all the guys that get injured in that rotation, he's going to get plenty of opportunity.
Okay.
So
there we go.
So my the risk. Right now, and where I have him literally right after this tier, like 61st.
That was dumb.
After the injured guys. that the Dodgers are going to start the year, barring health, with Yamamoto, Snell, Glasnow, Otani in the rotation.
Mm-hmm.
We assume they're not going to sign another starting pitcher.
They could very well sign another starting pitcher. Whatever.
And so that could push Sheehan down. We also had Greg Jewett in the reliever presentation mentioned that there's a quote directly from the Los Angeles Times that said Sasaki was told that if he pitches out of the bullpen at the end of the season, he will be given the opportunity to start next year.
That's weird.
So he's going to come into spring. He's going to come into spring training as a starter, and so Sasaki will get the opportunity to start. Who knows if he? Yeah. Who knows? And so for me, it was just a matter of like, I just put the injured guys before him, and I figured the injured guys would either move further up or further back, and then Sheehan would find out, would wind up kind of in the same area that Nick has.
And I will say, with Emmett Sheehan, he's the prototypical guy of like the young one that we think is like really good, and oh, only if he gets his chance, then he'll do really well. I am trying as much as I can to rank highly pitchers who have done it, who have actually done the thing, sure. And all we need them to do is do the thing again.
Right.
Right? And Emmett Sheehan hasn't yet. He has in doses.
Right.
But Dodgeritis exists.
Right.
And it, oh.
Sure. But then I
want no anxiety.
I think they're going to have a six-man rotation. They have three Japanese guys, a lot of injured guys.
I am
I
with
think
you.
The opportunity's there
I
for
am
Sheehan.
With you. It's I just also do. They rotate them. Ben Kasparis is the guy, or maybe it's Justin Rebelski or whatever.
And just, we will get into this Max more. We'll get into this more in March, but as we've talked about a bunch, and I know Eno on his podcast points it out a bunch as well, there are going to be a lot of those starting pitchers who come into spring training with no more minor league options.
Right.
And Emmett Sheehan will have multiple minor league options. So you get a situation where you have Justin Robleski or Landon Knack, uh-huh. and they can't be sent to the minors, but Emmett Sheehan can. So do you start the season with Landon Knack as your fifth starter because otherwise you cut him, or do you start the season with Emmett Sheehan? So there are just lots of reasons
good point.
Could be Emmett Sheehan not being in the rotation to start the year, being a long reliever, being a spot six starter if they're going to use him, mm-hmm. whatever it is.
And there's, oh my gosh, I can't express this one. You want to avoid as much as possible having that guy who gets skipped the first time around.
Right.
Oh, gosh, it's the worst. You don't know. We've seen the retrospect. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, of course. He just started on August 15th and everything was, April 15th and everything was great. We don't know that. We're going to be like, should we be dropping him? It's April 1st. I don't know. I don't know what to do. That might happen with Emmett Sheehan.
Sure.
And, oh, gosh, you just got to, like, double down on it then. It's so frustrating.
Well, thanks for working through that with
me.
Oh,
absolutely, Jake. We're here. You know, ignore your therapist. It's fine. We got you.
We are now moving on to 60 to 80, or 61 to 80, I should say, because it will upset Nick. Shane Baz is not ranked here me anymore. I have Shane Baz up at 49. He's here at 68. So I moved Shane Baz up considerably while doing my working on my presentation for top 25 starting pitchers. But so he is on this document.
Still. And I do want to mention that you see Spencer Strider at 70 for Eric, but you don't see Spencer Strider for me, even though it's the top 80 at this point.
And Bailey Ober is no longer in my top 100. So Bailey Ober will ignore him on here.
Yeah.
He's not welcome.
Over
the
hills and far away, yes. Really, for us, actually, it's like mine starts here at 70 to 80 because that's the injured tier ending at Jared Jones there. And then for Eric at 63 with Noah Cameron. And look at this. We have some guy named Sino Harris. He's going to come on up. Yeah.
Enos Harris.
What do we got here, buddy?
My eyes are going.
And where are they going?
I'm trying to look. I'm looking through all the names. And I'm like, yo, I know this guy with like a really awesome breaking ball. And he's got two fastballs and he pitches in a pitcher's park. And I'm pretty sure he has a spot in a rotation, but I don't see him on here anywhere. Where is Braxton Ashcraft?
Oh, don't do this. So this is really funny to me is so we did a podcast network mock draft in the middle of October, and it's one of my favorite things we do every year as a staff is because we don't really have any sort of 12-teamer ADP out there, and certainly for me, who has no hitter ranks, I'm the guy that took Junior Caminero 6th overall. And everyone goes, okay, Nick, I'm glad you do pitching. So here's the thing, though. Eno was in it because with the Kraft on our network. And as the number one slot, I believe you took Ashcraft before the 20th round. Is that right? It was like the 17th or 18th. I was, you know, is it Graham? No, it's Braxton. And I have a couple things
Graham
about.
Graham would have been way worse.
Yeah, that would be really funny.
For the record,
I was like,
worse.
I was like, I didn't know. You know, I was like, did Jake and Rick talk about him being a closer or something? Is that what I'm missing? No. With Braxton, I don't like his fastball. I just don't think it's that good. Yeah, he has two, and that's cool. So does like Kyle Bradish, but I don't like those fastballs. Oh, that's a fun one. I love that. I don't know. I don't think that the slider movement or the curveball movement is quite the same. Actually, the command really is not the same either. It's also the Pirates, and the Pirates don't know what to do with him. They have not treated him like a proper. Right. Spore says they don't know what to do in general.
Also,
I don't know if he's going to. They have a lot of choices, too.
If Jared Jones is back, is he in the rotation? Because, again, we'll talk about this again. Mike Burrows, no minor league options. Happy birthday, Mike Burrows. Toby brought up Mike Burrows. Toby brought up Mike Burrows on the starting pitcher panel before, but Mike Burrows has popped for me in a lot of work I've been doing in the preseason as well, where, like, I think Mike Burrows gets a shot in that rotation. And so this is also me being like, oh, my God, they're going to start Bubba Chandler in AAA again next year.
No, they're not.
They could very well do that because it's the Pirates. I like Braxton Ashcraft. I like Braxton Ashcraft.
Merrill Keller.
Mitch Keller. The other one.
What, Hunter Brown? I was like, you hear the cheers from the crowd. It's incredible. I will say with Braxton Ashcraft, can you tell me a good start he had outside of Rocky Road? Not really.
Everybody besides Nick just memorizes starts all the time.
And that was the one where it was Bubba Chandler's debut, and we're like, all right, Braxton, like, come on, give us like 3-4 innings, and then he went 5, and we're all just so upset. And that was it. That was when everyone started focusing on Braxton Ashcraft, only because we were focused on Bubba. I know everyone. Also, you are not everyone, Eno.
The St. Louis start.
Right. Okay. No, I'm not saying that. Like, I do apologize. I did say only one. Okay. So I remember following this entire year. He hadn't had a single start above 75 pitches yet from them. Only one of 5.2. strikeouts of about one an inning. I want to say maybe a little bit more than that. All I'm trying to say with it though is like, Braxton Ashcraft, for me to be excited about him, I would want him to show and be like, yo, I'm dope. And I'm not seeing that from what I have seen. Is just, all right, the fastball, it's not really as overpowering one as I want it to be. The slider I love is like 93, and that has a lot of potential. But that's it to me, and I don't trust that he's an efficient pitcher either. No.
It didn't make you feel dope?
Didn't make me feel dope. Yeah. When he went on the mound, I didn't feel dope with Braxton Ashcraft. So that breaking ball does when he commands it correctly.
We only have a few minutes here because then we have another podcast or another a splendid event happening after here. So I just moved us over to our ranks 81 to 100. We've got a few questions, a few people lined up to end
this
off
this
here.
This is so funny. Josh Berry highlighted Andrew Painter, and I'm like, I hate this.
So right. Rick Graham, lead it off with this question.
Yeah, so I feel like Mackenzie Gore, because I was going to bring last one. On the last one, Eric had him at, I think, in the 70s. Nick's got him at 81. Washington pitchers in general, whole new organization, right? Pretty much whole new staff. Like, is there – it's kind of hard. I feel like there's just a lot of upside still left in some of the, like, not just Mackenzie Gore, but, like, a Cade Cavalli, or there's other guys there that I feel like with a whole new pitching staff, a whole new developmental staff, whole new coaching staff, I feel like there's – there's some upside there. And at 81 and 70, I mean, that's – I don't know where their ADP – where Mackenzie Gore's ADP is right now, but that feels like, someone worth – we've seen Gore have, really good starts in the past, so it feels like someone to kind of – I don't know. This feels like there's still upside left there for Mackenzie Gore.
I'll take this really quickly. Braxton Ashcraft breaks the Wasker, rule. So that's why I don't like him. It's a slider without a good enough fastball. Okay, fine.
Tom McKenzie.
I know it isn't. That was the joke. Okay.
You still like Kyle Bradish.
I do, because he has two breaking balls I like. We have Mackenzie Gore, who is frustrating. And I don't trust the Nationals, even though they've changed the coaching staff and everything. It's still hard for me to trust it. I remember the entire season, not the entire season, I apologize, especially the second half, constantly was struggling with his command and what his approach was going to be, right? We showed up initially on opening day. I actually remember Justin Mason was there at playback.tv, and we're like, okay, he just had, what, 14 strikeouts against the Phillies? And he showcased a new thing, which was throwing a ton of sliders against lefties. And I'm like, Mason, I feel like this is something new. He goes, he's Mackenzie Gore. He's going to be Mackenzie Gore. Let me take another sig, and that's fine. That's, I think that's what he said, yeah. That was. It sounds like that because of all the smoke, of course, in the room. And no, he doesn't. But Mackenzie Gore did have that slider, and it was effective, and it had that feel for it, and then he lost it. It wasn't as good. And then that was really what the second half was. So I think with Gore, the start of a tier, and it's kind of like, what do I do? Do I put him in the category of I like him, so I'm going to do it? Or is it the tier of I don't know what this start means for the future? And that's why I have him here. I have this in, like, the frustrating, I don't know what to do with you, Jack Flaherty.
Yeah.
It's really hard. I do feel like Mackenzie Gore and Flaherty are kind of away from the others, but I would have them in, like, a two-person tier or something. I didn't feel right. So that's where I'm at with it.
I have Gore back here at 73.
Yeah,
I have Gore in a tier. It's a little bit of, like, I've labeled it, I like you, but you're crazy. And it's guys, like, with Kodai Senga and Tanner Bibee, where it's like, I like what's going on sometimes, but it just can't land on anything specific. Justin Mason, question here as we wrap it up.
I just have a process question.
Sure.
Go back to the previous one.
Mm-hmm.
So you, Eric, have Luis Castillo at number 76. Nick has him at number 75.
Oh, that's cute.
He has never been below a top 50 starting pitcher in his entire
career. Oh, because
career.
Of the play rater?
So I'm wondering,
oh, yeah.
Why are you guys so low on guys with consistency?
you go ahead, because don't like the play rater.
Yeah, it's a very valid question. I'll say that it comes down to, like, because I have adopted, because I appreciate Nick's strategy of ranking in tiers, right, lumping guys together, it's just where I wind up putting Castillo. Like, there's a tier of full injured guys. There's the, like, I like you, but you're crazy tier. And then Castillo's in this tier of guys with, like, Merrill Kelly and Seth Lugo, where the ceiling might not be overly high, but they're like, and they're kind of on the downside of their careers, but they're still pretty trustworthy.
That's it.
And so when we get into spring, it's going to be Castillo is here, or Castillo, I feel a little bit better about him, and he jumps over, like, the injured guys to, like, 52. And so that's kind of where it is as we get into it, that, like, this is a little bit of a placeholder spot for me saying, I don't think this is the same Luis Castillo, and I think we have continued to see him get incrementally worse, and maybe it's only just another little slight bit and a slight bit and a slight bit, but there's also a chance that it's a cliff at some point.
Oh, man. It is. I think if you take all of the older pitchers and you want to make a prediction on which one who was top 50 in the player rater, who is not going to next year, it is easily Luis Castillo for me. The fastball has gotten worse velocity-wise, and he had to have his best fastball command to make this season work, because the changeup and the slider were just not nearly what it used to be. I do not trust that Castillo is going to have exactly that kind of precision with his four-seamer and sinker. I think he was just, oh my gosh, so on thin ice for a long time. And if you were following my roundups, you could kind of hear my voice of, like, oh, is this actually it? Is this not? The absolute precariousness of his approach. So I see this as a guy that is a very big potential bomb for your team, of someone you hold on for way too long and before you can realize that how much he's hurt you. Also, being a top 50 in the player rater is just telling me you didn't get hurt. right? Like, and that's not necessarily what I want to do. I would rather have two guys who are not in the top 50, one that gets hurt, and then I have replacement value in a 12-teamer. Now, in a 15-teamer, Luis Castillo is way more valuable for that mm-hmm. because the replacement level is way lower. But in a 12-teamer, I would much rather play that game than sticking with Castillo as, I don't know what it was in the play rate. I'm going to assume it was like 46 or something like that. 37, sure. So so that's kind of my philosophy with that. I understand if someone else does not agree with that one, but that's where I am.
Chris Weber, last question.
Last question.
Of the podcast.
All right.
Yeah. Second time, first time?
Yep.
I didn't have a question. I just wanted to be first in line for FPES 26.
Oh, okay,
no,
great.
No, Jonah Tong.
Jonah Tong.
So I see you guys both have him ranked around the same place. Now, I am curious, do you think that Jonah Tong belongs there as currently constructed, mm-hmm. or does he need something else?
Oh, man. I mean, first of all, he needs to be given job security.
He needs to be in the rotation.
And that's actually where I did here. Like, Mick Abel's in this tier, so is Peyton Tolley, right? I don't know if those guys are going to actually be in that rotation. If Jonah Tong is in that rotation to start the year, that means two things. One, that the Mets like where he's at. Mm-hmm. And two, honestly, that he's showcased that either his four-seamer in splitter, if Vulcan, is really good at that moment, or there is something else added. I don't actually think he's going to find something else. And that scares me. I do not like your split change as your number two pitch. It's kind of, you all know that at this point. So I am very worried about Jonah Tong here.
Yeah, and I honestly think if the season started, well, the season starts now, he'll be in the rotation, but the Mets are going to sign at least one starter. I think it's very likely he doesn't begin the year in the Mets rotation. Oh, I think Nolan McLean is ahead of him, and so then you get Senga and Manaea and Peterson and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
There you go. I don't like that answer.
Oh, yeah. Man. Chris Weber and all of you, well, thank you so much.
Thank you, everybody, for asking questions. Thank you for being a part of this. I am Eric Samulski, the Pelican.
I'm Nick Pollock, the Lion.
And we're ready for some family feud.
Oh, yeah. Dun, dun, da, da.